नहीं, तू अपने लैब से बैग वैग लेके आ शाम से। हाँ
Hey Angelo.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi,
Kind of tired.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
It was Thursday night.
Lots of going on these days.
Sure is. Still don't know a lot, don't know enough either.
All right, there's people joining. I missed your talk last week. Hopefully there will be there's a recording that I can look
Should
at.
be. Yeah. There was some good chatter about the characterization platform seemed to be at least with the folks that were on the call, so.
Yeah, that certainly probably could be interesting for our project as well. In particular, one of the thrusts. We'll look at that and
Okay.
Let's see how many people show up. This is meeting just a couple of days before a big holiday.
Yeah. Yep. Probably people taking off early tomorrow, I
Probably share my slides in the time, so
Yeah, no worries.
definitely. Should be seeing something.
Yep.
see. And of course, I need this one. That's probably better.
There you go.
We'll be waiting a couple of minutes. Still see people joining. I don't know if Paul is going to join today. He's been out for a little bit, but he was sending emails to Facebook. Maybe, yeah. Maybe we should start since we put together about 30 slides and so don't want to separate one more time. How's that sound?
That's good.
All right. Okay, so today we're going to talk about another project within this A project of Meerkat, and it's the day for ARACE, which stands for Adaptive Ultrafast Energy Efficient Intelligent Sensing Technologies. I'm going to give you this talk together with some of the co-PIs on this proposal, in particular Jana Thayer, Nino Miceli from Argonne, Dionisio Dorin, and Sarah Shankar that are from Slack. We'll tell you a little bit about this project. First, high level. Of course, we started very recently. Actually, today I think is the we start for the second quarter of the activities of this particular project. So there's not many results that we can show, but certainly we can talk about some of the preliminary work that was done and that we have plan to expand during the course of this project. As you can see from these slides, there's a quite large collaboration. We have six representative of six national laboratory plus two universities, Stanford and Hawaii. And I also maybe I want to stress, and this will be clear in the next slides, that many of the participants from the laboratory are people who work in the detector departments of these facilities, and they are basically working on X-ray detectors for light sources. This will explain why, as a application case, we choose X-ray detector, but we will try not to be obviously very focused on that specific aspect. I also want to mention, and I saw that he's joined today. Scott Evans is from GE Vernova, is our industrial advisor. So people from Meerkat will meet him, as he would probably join as to represent this project, our industry advisory board, which has not been formed officially yet. But I really want to thank Scott for joining this project. So let me start with something that should not be absolutely controversial, and just to set the stage. As you all know, sensing technology are really becoming ubiquitous and are driving efficiency and enabling innovation in multiple sectors. There is a nice AI-generated picture on these slides that show some of the sectors in which sensors are actually used quite a bit for monitoring activities. And maybe I should say that this is not single sensors. Usually, when the configuration of which sensor is used is a network of sensors. So information is gathered from multiple sensors and then processed collectively. One other characteristic, of course, of this is that either for the sheer number of sensors in this network or for the increased precision that these sensors need to have in specific sectors, the amount of data that is generated is actually quite large and also generated at high speed because usually these networks are starting operating at a much larger speed than they used to operate in the past. So this creates a problem that was recognized as one of the critical problem in microelectronics in the SRC report data plan a few years ago, which was called the analog data deluge. And it's something that we should try to solve because, of course, it creates problems in terms of communication bandwidth, the problems of memory and storage of this data. And at the same time, with this, also we get an increase in power consumption. So these are all aspects that an optimized architecture processing network should be able to solve. And with these slides, I'm going to show that now, this beside the sectors that are more. Let's say applicable to probably to society. Also, this problem is present in experiment for scientific mission. And here on these slides, I'm showing you some of the mission areas which SLAC is involved in, some of the experiment that we have with the data rates that are involved in the data acquisition from signals from this particular application and also the total amount of data that needs to be stored. This is quite large. Just to give you something more quantitative that can tell you how much data we actually need to store, we can take a couple of examples. For instance, a 16 megapixel megahertz detector, which are things that are planned for CLS, our photosensitivity facility here at SLAC, will produce about 40 terabytes per second of data. And considering the amount of time that CLS operates per year, that would be equivalent to store about 1.2 zettabytes of data per year. That's only one trend. If we take as an example instead a high luminosity LHC, the future upgrade of LHC at CERN will produce about 10 petabytes per second of data that is similar to the internet traffic of the entire North America. And that if would have been if people would store completely the data, that doesn't happen in this kind of application, that would produce about 200 zettabytes of data per year. In comparison, the entire IoT network nowadays is about 30 billion connected devices and generates about 100 zettabytes per year. So these numbers are huge, and we need to do something, and we can do something because if we look at the raw data, there is definitely a large mismatch between the data production rate and the information rate. So once we start processing this data, the amount of and extract well what is the interesting information, that quantity, that volume of data becomes much, much smaller. So can we do this in real time? That's the biggest question. So on these slides, I'm showing try to take a go to a higher abstraction level. And if we look in general sensing networks, we can divide them in four sections. One is the perception layer for layer. One is the perception layer where we basically do we acquire the data, the acquisition of the signals from sensors. Then we have a connectivity layer where we transmit the data through the network, and then we process this data, and then we do the final data analysis that is application specific. usually innovation is in between these layers. And if we have, would have to somehow identify what are the key area research area that would allow us to optimize these sensing networks, I think we can say that there is a component that is related to new materials and devices for sensing. That's a component, of course, in the microelectronics architecture. So front-end electronics and then processing electronics that can be introduced inside the nodes of this architecture to either acquire or process the data. There's innovation in the way we interconnect various nodes of a set of a network, which is basically, of course, an area of communication. And sometimes that also can relate to packaging, but maybe less important compared to other kinds of application. And of course, there's a problem of how we process the information within the architecture. And then, of course, if we have multiple nodes, that already tells you that if you want to push the processing toward the sensor, you probably have to distribute the computing across multiple layers within a network of sensors. And that probably that computing is also heterogeneous in the sense that there will be different kind of different modalities of computing that can be implemented at each one of these layers. So the way we organize the network is very important, and so that in itself constitutes another area in which we can introduce innovation. Finally, of course, we want to try to optimize or reduce the gap, let's say, between data production and information extraction. And then, of course, it's a problem that needs to increase the efficiency in terms of energy consumption of this network. So within our race, of course, we don't want to study everything because that's a very broad set of areas of research. And what we want to do is to try to develop an underpinning microelectronics technology specifically for ultra-fast, energy-efficient, dense network of sensors. This is the case, for instance, for large area imagers and all pretty much all the detectors that we use in facility and experiment in our laboratories, and try to mitigate or reduce the extreme data deluge problem that we face nowadays. So we want to do this tackling the problem from four different aspects. First thing that we want to try to do is to reimagine the network of sensors as data-driven, adaptive, intelligent architectures. And I will explain what these terms means in more details in the next slides. We want to introduce optimally distributed computing at the data source. We usually call this edge. Some people have a slightly different meaning for that word, but in our case, what we mean is really push computation at the sensing nodes and then with all the layers above within the network and architecture. We want to leverage mesh and hierarchical interconnection. We will see and I will explain this in current architecture for this kind of networks. The communication is actually one way from the nodes, the sensing nodes down up to the data acquisition system. And of course, once we do this and define these some architectures, we want to study a methodology for benchmarking them in terms of energy and information extraction efficiency. So these are the four key elements that will drive our research plan. And of course, we want to start from something that is familiar to us. And so we have decided to declare for this project as a application case study, X-ray detector systems for ultra-fast, ultra-bright high-energy light sources, like is the case of CLS or upgrades, of course, FPS. And the other element that we want to do is that we want to make sure that the architecture that we will study are compatible with high energies and also operation in extreme environment, because that's the case of future experiments at this kind of facility. Now, of course, we want to do this in a way that is also applicable to other fields, and which means that the technology that we will develop should be with some adaptation portable to other fields, for instance, fusion or energy physics, but more broadly to other scientific industrial fields, scientific and industrial fields. Okay, so let me explain a little bit, expand a little bit more on those particular four aspects. And let me start with this slide so that shows the typical architecture of an imager for scientific application. Other detectors are maybe different from this, but the components are very similar. So you can start from the very top here. You can see that there is a focal plane of the imager, and this is usually a tiled focal plane composed of sensors. And underneath each one of them, there is a front-end circuit. In particular, there will be multiple for each sensor. What drives the dimension of these tiles is the maximum area we can actually build nowadays, front-end chips, which is the reticle size of commercial technologies, so usually on the order of 2 by 2 centimeters. So we can take a sensor and connect it to multiple ASICs and then create a tile and then tile this focal plane into a larger area. We try to use maximum area for these devices because we want to minimize gap. So that's an optimization that is related to application. So now you may see that we have a first element that process signal underneath these sensors. Then usually there are one or a couple of layers of FPGAs that take data from a subset of tiles. They format the data and then aggregate basically the data from the connected sensors. They format them and then they send them upstream to the data acquisition system. There is no communication between any of these tiles, certainly not within any of these ASICs, not between the FPGAs within each one of the layer above and so on. So the communication flows directly from each one of the sensors down to the acquisition system. And so nowadays, we don't do pretty much any processing in the front-end ASICs. We just do this analog signal conditioning, and then a conversion from analog to digital. Then we send that information to the FPGA that, again, don't do any processing. And then until the data arrive to the data system, there's basically no processing. All that is done, all the intelligence now is in the data system that does the calibration of the detector and then converts physical electrical data or digital data representative of electrical signal into physical quantities and then performs the various analysis workflow dedicated on each one of them. So we can do something a little bit more powerful if we start pushing some of the computation within this architecture. And this is something that we have done. And what we have done is we introduce some static processing capability. And I want to stress the attention on this word and I'll try to explain what that means. So we can imagine that now in the various layers that we have within our architecture, either the front-end ASICs or the FPGA level behind it, or we can introduce additional, as I was saying, maybe a farm of FPGA in between, let's say, what was originally the detector and the data system. We can do some process, some stuff. We can start doing some processing of the information coming out from the sensors. And here I want to maybe point out that the versatility and the computation that we can do varies depending on the level of where we introduce processing capabilities. If you think about it, the data system, of course, has a view of the entire data coming from the entire focal plane. So this is the place where you can do most, of course, most of the analysis and the most complex analysis. As you start going down into your architecture, each element will see a little portion of your focal plane and has no knowledge of what happens in the neighboring sections. That goes down, of course, to the front-end ASICs that see a very small portion of your focal plane, and so a very small portion information of sensors. And between the sensors in each one of these, let's say, attached to a same ASIC, there's also no communication. And so the processing capability gets reduced as we push them down into the chain toward the sensor. And in addition to that, also call it processing architectures that we can introduce in these elements becomes more and more resource limited because, of course, the computational power that can introduce into these elements becomes smaller and smaller as we reach the ultimate node of the sensor itself. And so the only things that we have managed to do in the past are things that are quite simple. For instance, putting a threshold on each one of the pixels and saying, okay, is there at all information? Did you get any signal or not? And that works very well for experiments, for instance, that are sparse, so where data arrives and are sparse in nature. So only a few pixels have information at that point. Of course, we can read out only the pixels that have information. So you gain a lot. So you can actually go much faster. And this is an example of something that we built here at Slack. On the other hand, this processing capability is really designed for worst-case scenarios. And so that means that, for instance, when you talk about specification, you can tolerate at the maximum rate of application, LC-LS, for instance, which is 1 MHz, a maximum occupancy of 1%. So can we do better than that? Well, the point that I always once tries to make is that if we move away from this hardware-driven architecture, where everything is sized to handle a worst-case scenario for the data, and we start instead creating an architecture where all the processing capability are not static anymore, but are dynamic and gets adjusted depending on the kind of data, we can do much better. And this is basically what we want to start. And if we can imagine some of the things that we could potentially study during this project, and we have started making a list. And of course, we will go through this list and make sure that it makes sense for the various workflows that we want to analyze. And so there's a work that needs to happen, a code design that needs to be happening between the computational function that we will introduce and the analysis workflows that for which they will be utilized. But just to give you some example, one could imagine that nowadays when we size our front end, we optimize, for instance, the gain over the first very first amplifier to get the maximum signal a certain maximum signal that is what we believe is the worst case scenario in which this detector will have to operate. But depending on the application, that maximum signal can be much smaller. So we could potentially adjust the gain of the very front end based on the incoming signal, and that will help us to optimize signal-to-noise ratio. So same thing could be done, for instance, for the range of acquisition, for the filtering function. We could control, depending on if the pixel sees signal or not, its power consumption. So dynamically, we could adjust the compression level that we put in the data before sending it out, for instance, from the very first front-end chip, which of course will reduce the strain that we have on the communication coming out from the various front-end chip to the first layer of FPGA, and so on. And of course, as I was saying before, the complexity of this function, dynamic function that we can introduce, and some of them are listed here on the slides, will become larger and larger as we move down in the architecture toward computing elements that see a larger portion of the focal plane. So versatility goes up as we keep, let's say, processing closer to the data system. On the other hand, the reduction rate goes up if we start immediately doing some processing as close as possible to the sensor. As you can imagine, there's probably some optimum that we can play there. And so understanding how to distribute the computing within this network and optimize for energy efficiency is one of the key things that we have to do in this project. And so to try to address these kind of problems that I tried to introduce in the previous slides, we have defined our project around five thrusts. Now, I'm telling you already that the work within each one of these trusts is really heavily interconnected with each other trust. And so really this is a co-design. We already seen that for the trust that started already in the first quarter, which are only trust one and two and trust five, we already having joint meetings to try to work toward the workload that we have laid out. So I'm going to describe each one of these trusts, and for each one of these, I'm going to ask some of the KPIs to give some information on things that have been done in the past, and then we will continue to explore within this each one of them. So let's start with the first trust, which is really we call it dynamic resource constraint and workflows for adaptive experimentation, and try to deal with the fact that if we look at the current workflows that have been used for the analysis in this kind of experiment, these are usually use models that are quite large and power hungry, so we cannot certainly immediately take this and try to implement them in hardware. We need to rethink these models in a way that could operate on the resource-limited hardware. And so we will try to leverage and optimize existing models for light sources and then potentially applicable to other fields, but we will try to redesign them in a way that can be operated in a resource-constrained computing architecture, these could be ASIC, FPGAs, or specifically designed accelerators. And we will, to create adaptivity and this possibility to dynamically adjust the processing function in our architecture, we will try to create the low latency feedback that can act on the control of the network itself. So now at the beginning of the project and this first month, what we have started working on is to try to survey workflows for different scientific fields to try to really to extract the most common computational elements that will benefit for execution in real time. And these are the ones that we will study during the project, at least a subset of them. And to actually make sure to capture broadly all scientific application, we just conducted a mini workshop on data flows for intelligence sensing that was run last Friday. And it really started with the idea of doing something very small, inviting a few key people, speakers that we thought could represent pretty much a large broad set of workflows. The interest was quite high, so it turned out to become a full-day workshop with 67 people that attended and that are very excited to continue actually participating in this project. So the ARRAYS team is actually growing. In particular, this trust is led by Yana Fair and with Ryan Coffey as Slack and Argonne. And I'm going to ask now Yana to talk a little bit on the next slide about the data reduction pipeline, which is the system that we are designing here in Slack. Yana is actually designing here in Slack for the execution of data flows for CLS. And then we will move to trust. Yana, do you want to talk on the next slide?
Yes. Okay, so a little bit about how I learned to stop worrying and love the data deluge. We built this heterogeneous LCLS to data analysis pipeline, and it's designed to handle the extreme data rate from LCLS to detectors for a variety of LCLS experiment types. So one of the distinguishing characteristics between this pipeline and this, it looks very similar to the sorts of pipelines you might see in HEP, in that there's a layer for triggering, a layer for filtering, and then layers for processing. But one of the key distinguishing characteristics of LCLS is that it is very dynamic. We have different experiments every week, and things change. So we built this pipeline to handle that adaptability, the ability to change things. So when we talk about co-design, the detector is just a piece in the chain. So we want to make a more adaptable detector to go with an adaptable data pipeline that stretches from the insides of the detector all the way out to HPC. This pipeline combines ASICs, FPGAs, and GPU, near the detector and in the data reduction pipeline, which is the first computing layer that sees the data. The data then gets written to disk in this fast feedback layer, and there's additional computing there to do some dedicated data quality monitoring and fast feedback. And then the data gets transferred out to offline, where on-site computing and storage is available, as well as off-site, which means that we can leverage facilities like NERSC and Oak Ridge Leadership Class facilities and Argonne Leadership Class facilities to train models, retrain models, and analyze data. And so we are basically combining these ASICs for near detector feature extraction or data massaging information extraction, FPGAs and GPUs with the features that are available in HPC to make an end-to-end pipeline that is fully adaptable to all of the changing experiment conditions and the changing experiments at LCLS. So there are some new opportunities here to more rapidly convert data to science by moving some pieces of our algorithms into the detector. As mentioned before, the detector, there is not as much real estate available there as it is in HPC, but all of the algorithms and workflows that we run and have developed and are familiar with are developed in an HPC or large compute farm environment on fully calibrated, fully assembled images. So we are not used to thinking about the images as being something that can live and breathe and change in response to stimuli. So this is a new thing for us. And so the first steps are just trying to figure out which pieces of our algorithms we can move online to handle the data as it looks when it comes off the sensor, and try to make these algorithms deployable across ASICs, which are low power systems, and FPGAs, and provide us with low latency feedback there. We also want to put complex ML or some ML into the edge. And that means taking very large models, which are often several millions to billions of parameters, and squeezing them into an itty-bitty living space inside of an ASIC or FPGA. And that itself is a difficult trick, but it can be done using some techniques that we've piloted in LCLS 2. And so we have some methodology to take large models, make them smaller, and then fit them into an edge device. So that will allow us to optimize the pipeline in new ways. What we can then do with this is experiment steering. So we can use this to generate feature extracted data that we can use to tune the experiment to take the data we want, only the data we want, and none of the data that we don't want. And ultimately, will reduce the time to science because it means you don't have to process the data more than once. You are producing a data product at the beginning of the pipeline, and you don't have to use additional computing later in the pipeline to produce that data product again. It also allows us to dynamically adapt to what we're seeing in the detector. So if a new feature appears, or some new experimental condition arises, the detector might be able to adapt to it and react appropriately in the context that we provide it. And once again, we rely on this connection to the local S3DF and remote computing resources. By implementing all of this at the edge, it means we will mitigate network and storage costs downstream, and it means we will reduce the amount of computing we need to do later. That just frees us up to do more and smarter and more powerful things in the computing later on. But overall, it is really looking at this as a holistic system and a combination of strategies that allow us to handle these extreme data rates. And now pushing some of that adaptability and expandability and scalability deep, deep, deep into the separate layers of the detector itself. So I will end there and pass it to the next person.
All right. So thanks, Jan. And as of course we identify these computational elements that we want to push into our sensing network, we need to understand what is the best computational platform that we can to introduce in the various elements of the network. And this is actually what Trust2 will study. And as you can see here, there's many people from different institutions working on this, and that have worked on edge computing architectures in the past, in particular people from Livermore, as well as some we have done some work with Slack. I will describe now a couple of things that as an example of preliminary work that was done in this direction. And then I will start asking Nino Miceli from Argonne to talk about one of this architecture that we developed called Sparkfix RT between Slack and Argonne. Then I'll pass it to Dionisio Dori, who will talk about auto-calibration in real time and some of the aspects that we are studying here at Slack. And then I want to ask Sada Shankar to talk a little bit about his methodology for benchmarking computing architectures that we hope to extend to edge computing architectures in this project. So we'll start with Nino.
As a first example, we've worked on, as Angela has mentioned, sort of in prior work, we've been looking at how to tackle the data deluge problem sort of at the source, right at the front end ASIC. So if you consider sort of just run some numbers, you know, a million frames per second in one ASIC, 200 by 200 pixels, 12 bits, it's almost 500 gigabits per second, which is quite difficult to handle even from a when you're dealing with SFP and stuff like this and networking. So what we've looked at is, can we, you know, can we w there's still quite a ways to for our community scientific detectors to ride Moore's law. Now we're going from like 130, 65 to 28. So it becomes more feasible to start incorporating more particular digital functionality from the computing domains directly into detector silicon. As mentioned before, Angela and Yana, that at the front end, you're very, very resource constrained. So you have to be very careful what you design. And here, co-development with or co-design with between the detector developers and the domain scientists is very critical to understand what can be done and where the losses are. So in the RT, or in the Sparkfix RT project, we explored in particular one of these digital computing domains. Functionality in particular compression on X-ray science data applications. So on the left is sort of shown various different lossy compression schemes and how their effect is manifest in actual reconstructed data. This has been work that's yeah, so very tight collaboration and tight feedback between domain scientists and detector developers. And then actually implementing that into something that's something in hardware. The next slide. Too far. So just here are some details about this project. So we've this is basically the first X-ray detector ASIC that has on-chip calibration and compression. As was mentioned, sort of this is a product that is more or less complete, is sort of the final stages, but basically a collaboration where between Slack and Argonne, and sort of combining the pixel matrix with the analog compression, and there's some hardware that we're building and testing at the Beamlines very soon. So moving forward, one of the issues here is on the right, you can see that one of the things that maybe doesn't scale very well is SRAM with technology. So SRAM takes a lot of space compared to just the digital logic. So trying to come up with algorithms that minimize the amount of memory. Another thing that's typically, when you think of compression, most compression techniques are variable length, output variable length data, and that generally becomes very complicated. So practical reasons and other things. So can we move to sort of a fixed length compression and also think about not only just compressing the data, because oftentimes you have to decompress the data downstream, but can you actually do data reduction or feature extraction? And finally, sort of, can you bring the detector in the loop by getting feedback from the experiment to have the detector change dynamically with some analysis that's done downstream?
Dionisio?
Continuing with this collaboration between Argonne and Slack, we started thinking about how to understand and study these systems that are actually adaptable. So one of the things that we decided as part of this collaboration was, hey, we need an ASIC that is compatible with things being adapted. So the first thing that we decided is that we needed to study and make a prototype of an ASIC that has this high-speed reconfiguration aspects. And this is ongoing. It includes like a matrix with that is capable of having a sensor bump bonded to it with CSA and ADCs. The output of this ASIC then is sent to some sort of processing unit, which takes the data and then reasons about the data and make this high-speed reconfigurations. The idea here is not to do a frame-by-frame reconfiguration, but the idea is that between two frames, we would be able to change the state from the previous one to the next one in a way that we don't lose necessarily rate. In parallel with that, what we need is to understand how we can reason about the incoming data. And we plan on using AI models or engines that would take the live data, process them, and from time to time, output a new state of the system such that we reconfigure the ASIC. And this is sort of our framework on an adaptive detector. So this would enable us to study different algorithms, different data types, and also how we implement that in the hardware, whether it's a single ASIC, as I am highlighting here, or maybe into a distributed system where many ASICs can talk to each other, many FPGAs can talk to each other, and so on and so forth. And one of the things that we realized very early is that we do not necessarily have the detectors, the adaptive detectors in hand, which means that we need to figure out a way to simulate them in a way that we can then start studying that without actually having the real hardware. If we go to the next slide, then we can look at, I think there was an animation that didn't quite work here. We can start from the left side on thinking about the science cases. So with your ideal sample, you can actually simulate. And this simulator is a work that has been done as part of a collaboration or before actually the collaboration, but it's a work that Jana's group has been worked with many other people that allows us to simulate single particle images. Off of that, you get an ideal image. And off of this ideal image, we can start introducing the adaptations that will make the ideal image into a raw image. That is where we converge from sort of simulation into what I call a raw image. In this example, we take this raw image, apply calibrations because we just, let's say, created a image that is not ideal by adding noise, by adding the hot pixels, that pixels, and so on and so forth. With the calibration, we get to the state where we currently do things, where we have a calibrated image that can go be reconstructed, and there are a couple more modules here, and then we can compare the ideal image with the real image, evaluate that, and have some sort of feedback. So this means, not yet, Angelo. Yes, thank you. So this means we can go from simulation to real image and from real images, simulated real images, back into simulations, but we still don't have a way to change the system. So one way that we are considering right now is to use reinforcement learning to get the raw image, segment that as part of the pre-processing, understand what areas of the images can be useful for the questions we're posing to the system. We can use also as a reward the quality of the image, could be the energy that the ASIC is consuming as well, and we can use different weights for the different things to try to create an optimization, and then take an action at the detector level. This way, it allows us to reason with the different aspects, the different data sciences, and the different transformations in a way that we can anticipate the things that we are going to see once the prototype and future detectors arrive. I show here transformations that are at the detector level itself. So think about bias that influences the energy. It could be the ADC resolution. It could be many other things. And this is part of what Lorenzo and the team on Trust3 are studying. What can be transformed here? We're trying to figure out how can we reason about the data and make actions. But this does not necessarily mean changing the detector itself. If we go to the next slide, we can also use this to change things like the calibration parameter or the compression parameters. So instead of making changes to the detector, we can change the post-processing off of it. And then if we go to the next slide, we can also think about changing the calibration parameters, which was the first example that we said, hey, this might be an easier one to try to solve, which is, can we check if the detector is still calibrated? And if we can figure out if the detector is still calibrated, can we update the calibration to make sure the detector is always calibrated, so we don't run an experiment on a detector that is not calibrated? And all these study cases that I showed so far, we started with the single particle imaging type of data. But nothing prevents us from going to different types of science cases. And then if we go to the next slide, this is an example of another simulator that working with another person in Yana's group. This is a work that is heavily based on the PyTOMO, which was developed actually at Argonne. We can do tomography applications and do exactly the same thing. So I know there are several material scientists and scientists that have simulators and ways of reconstruct the samples and use within this frame. So this is a way to start making the decisions and reasons that we do that is science concerned. So we have now a way to actually embed the science situation and try to optimize for science and not for necessarily the calibration or the energy, but what can we do to make sure that the science outcome consider as part of our evaluation as we change the detector systems. And then if we go to the last slide that I am presenting, here is an example of an initial study that we are doing of a future detector. So we're simulated using this tomography example, a detector that we're going to be delivering next year, which is a Pixel HR 35 kiloframes per second, 4 megapixel. We did the simulations within ideal conditions. We then say, hey, I can position the sonograms into different parts of the detectors, and I can see how the quality of the reconstruction happens. So we created the mask, the proper mask with the proper sizes, and then we moved. First I started from the ideal one, then I moved into a position that is sort of the top left corner, and then start scanning it. And you can see how the signal to noise ratio degrades as we lose information because of the segmentation of the detector. So this is just to show how we are pushing the platform or the framework into enabling us to reason about the science of this upcoming and future detectors. And that's what I had to show.
Right, thank you, Dionysio. So we'll try to leverage all this work for the and converge it into our race for the within Trust 2. Within Trust 2, also, I was saying we will try to benchmark the architecture for information extraction efficiency and energy efficiency. And I want to give Sada Shankar the opportunity to talk about his work on benchmarking the computing architecture. Sada, so you connected?
Yes, thanks, Angelo. This slide shows three figures, and I will try to walk you through what is it we are trying to do. On the left-hand side is essentially looking through the entire computing stack. If you look at it, it kind of crystallizes into three different levels. One is more at the switching level, the transistor level, which is less applicable for this project. The second one is more at the instructional level. So that essentially represents hardware architecture and circuits. And the last one is the simulation level. So the y-axis you have on the first plot on the left is energy in joules, and it is kind of showing what I just explained to you. So that is essentially the summary of that is the entire computing stack can be abstracted into these three levels. For this particular project, levels 2 and 3 are more relevant than the level 1, which is more closer to the transistor. Now, if you go to the right-hand side more figure, you can essentially look at computing in terms of four different domains. And the four different domains are hardware systems, which are mostly in microelectronics, quantum information-based, and nature-inspired, and also the algorithms and software. The numbers you see are the headroom for energy efficiency that is possible along these four domains. So as I mentioned, there are three levels of computing and four domains in terms of computing. In this particular project, we will be mainly looking at the microelectronic systems represented in red and algorithms and software. So how are we going to go from these two levels of computing on the left figure to the right figure in which we are going to be essentially having energy decrease? And that is what the middle figure is showing. So what we are trying to set up here is a way of looking at different algorithms, that is dividing up the algorithms into different components and essentially estimating the energy it would use on different hardware architectures. You actually heard the team talk about actually three different architectures: ASICs close to the edge, then FPGA for timing, and then GPU for heavier computing. So you have actually three architectures. And then you listen to Dionisio talk about four algorithms at least: compression, reconstruction, segmentation, and data assimilation. So what we would be doing is we are setting up an exhaustive list of components of algorithms that we are going to benchmark for energy. And then these are going to be put together in the specific workflows that you heard mentioned and measure the energy. Because that will essentially feed back into saying what is the right partitioning of the algorithms onto what hardware platforms that you have. The three hardware platforms you heard, and about four algorithms. In fact, there's more than four algorithms in this project, but that partitioning will be done with energy efficiency as the key goal. So that's all I had.
Thanks, Saras. Let me go very quickly through the other trusts. So they're also quite late in the hour already. Trust three and four will be mostly focused to aspects that are either related to the alpha front end. As I said before, we want to try to move away from architectures for parallel front ends that are designed based on worst case scenarios and try to introduce the possibility to tune them as the difference. That's what Trust 3 will study. I will show you a slide that tries to explain this a little bit better. Trust 4 instead is going to look at the way we communicate within the network. As I said in my very first slides, nowadays the communication is just upwards from a sensing node to the data acquisition system. We will study this way to optimize this by introducing communication across the various layers of the detector. And we will try to leverage the studies that have been done, in particular, for instance, at Brookhaven, that are move away from synchronous communication and more toward asynchronous communication, which it technically usually shows that. And be done with a minimal power consumption. And so these two trusts have not started yet, so I don't have a lot to show. One thing that I want to highlight that within this project, we will try to prototype some of this solution, and this will be done within Trust 3 that has members of most of the entities designing the various solutions. Talking about the front end, the idea is basically to try to make front end highly parametric in a way that then we can model them and include them into a training algorithm. Nowadays, typically these front end are static again, and the training happens in whatever comes after. We try to include the front end in this kind of optimization. For now, there's preliminary work ongoing. In at the various institution, some of the things that we've been Yeah, the Slack is to design basically a chain and introduce parametric elements at the front end amplifiers in the ADC and also in the filtering that now we're trying to move to digital. And these are some simulation results we can expand on these aspects maybe in future meetings. The last thrust is that more related to materials and devices. As I said, we want to make sure that within this project we consider also elements of sensing, as the sensors, of course, are extremely different, particularly the front ends, and affect the requirements for the front end itself. And so the other element that I pointed out is that we want to make sure that the sensors will be applicable for in extreme environments and also to detect ice. And so there's a studies that we leverage that have been known within the copy apps that are part of Class 5, particularly Stanford and Livermore on the type of sensors. And the work on this has just started, and it has two kind of sensor for extreme environments and of course for the applications we are considering, in particular high energy, faster space pulses, and of course, harsher environments. And then we will study them in operational conditions, by the characteristics. And of course, then the architecture of the sensor itself will be co designed together with the contents. Initial studies have been initial steps toward this characterization have been done. Here are some of the examples of the things that this class 5 has started discussing in the their first meeting, the first work. But of course, this is what continues next month. This is the timeline for the project, and we just want to show it to you. So as we are basically here at this point, only class 1 and 2 has started. The bulk of the work will happen in the next fiscal year, and actually the next 2 fiscal years. And then in the last part of the project, we will try to characterize these prototypes that we've developed. And I'll close here, just showing a list of all the participants to these projects, and so for our knowledge, some of them interested in engaging with us, and they offered collaboration, even if they were not the original professor. Yeah, we are very close to the end of this meeting, so if there's only some quick questions, we're happy to answer.
Angela, this is Jeff. Just one quick comment. Your last thrust and GAN and ALGAN, there may be a lot of radiation effects data here at Sandia, not necessarily on our project, but there's lots of work going on there that might be of use to you guys that I could connect you with.
Yeah, I'm sure that could be ice part of the thrust the future to explore a possibility to collaborate and leverage your facilities as well.
Sure.
Another question or comment?
Thank you.